on secondary motor model, or more exactly, conversion of secondary motor model. What is my opinion of this particular model and of interesting results that may come out of it? Well, unlike Animal's Four Supraminals, which you know a lot, this model is a little bit more complicated, and certain features of it are not as attractive as the argument was for the brand new. But on the other hand, it has features which are not present in N+4, such as chaos symmetry, the Lagrange, and chaos symmetry breaking. And therefore, there is some qualitative physics that can be extracted out of it. And so I think it's worthwhile to explore both the gauge theory physics from the bulk perspective and the string theory physics, which is dual to the gauge theory knowledge. So let me remind you, the brain construction, which gives rise to this model. So we start with and see the four brains. And then BA being bar pairs. And the four brains are going to be spread 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 directions. And the DA and the bars are going to share 0, 1, 2, 3. And then 5, 6, 7, 8. So they are point like in the XY direction. And furthermore, I want to quantify this x-y direction in the circle of radius alpha. So, the diagram looks more or less like this. These are the vector brands. The gate and gate bar, the gate and gate bar, and these are the color brains. Now, what are the parameters we have here? So we have asymptotic spring coupling, new spring. Then we have asymptotic separation of the gate and gate bar, which I'm going to call L. Then there is the radius of the circle in the xy direction, which I'm going to call R4. And of course, there is a bound on the separation of 8 and 8 bar in order to see R4. And also, I should mention that I want to introduce entropy bounding conditions in the fermion so that at low energies, everything gets a mass, except gauge fields, which live on the four brain, and quarks and antiquarks, which live on the intersection. And these are the gauge fields. So the Lagrangian, you can write down, and it's basically five-dimensional gauge field and four-dimensional quarks, which live in the I need to put the dot functions on it. So this is our grand. So at energy scales, so the energy scale is much smaller than R1 or R4. The theory is just PCD, although it's largely PCD, but still it's just PCD because the gauge becomes four-dimensional and it works. Left hand it works, right hand it works also for the motion. So the Lagrangian has chiral symmetry. Well, actually, it has UNF symmetry, but the axial component of the chiral symmetry is vector symmetry. So this is the Brain's path.
How do you compute the five-dimensional coupling? G5 squared.
Oh, good. So the five-dimensional coupling here is G3 times L-string.
But the G-string varies as a function of X4.
The function of X4? Why would it vary as a function of X4?
Because of the 8-way.
Ah, good, good. Very good plan. So we are here looking at the regime where G-string goes to zero and NF stays fine and C goes in such a way that the top coupling due to the default, the top coupling on default frames is large and constant. And the effect reaction due to the 8 frames is good. So in other words, we are measuring and then
so once you derive this Lagrangian anti-linear weak foot coupling, then
now I'm talking about the weak foot coupling.
Right. So it's not so at this stage right. you just don't have any vector action whatsoever.
That's right. Before you go. Mm-hmm. But of course, in the strong coupling.
Right. Then.
So now we want to start with the system from the Hilbert point of view. And for that, we need to go to the strong coupling regime. Well, as usual, in the strong coupling regime, the gravity becomes a constriction. And while in angular forces we are minus, this happens when two coupling is much, much larger than one. Basically, the curvature correction is addressed by inverse power of two coupling. Here, the relevant quantity is five dimensional two coupling, which is equal to tensile strength over the radius of the x-y direction. So this is the quantity which tells you whether gravity is a good approximation or not. Now we are going to go to the regime where lambda of R4 is very large. And the default gradients are now we should switch to description where default gradients are substituted by some geometry, which in this case is So this is the New Horizon geometry of the default brains. Fk here is this function. U is the coordinate which is transverse to the default brains. The coordinates which lead on the workload of the default brains are x mu in the square. What else? Omega 4 is the phosphere, and the radius is related to lambda. Okay. Well, actually, let me just simplify my life and set L string to be equal to 1 in the remainder of the talk. So, remember, L string appears just crazy. So this is the New Horizon metric for the default brains. We can check that the curvature in string units everywhere small as long as lambda over half word is large. And there is also dilaton.
So is R for the radius of the X port?
Yeah.
So why does the size of R for matter?
Well,
there's no curvature there, just a circle.
Well, good. So as you see, the space has. So let me just draw the space in the U x4 coordinates. So what you see here is as U approaches UK, from above, the function f of k. It's getting smaller and smaller until eventually it becomes zero. So that's basically is the end of the space. So the geometry, therefore, is limited from below by some value in k. Now, as you go to infinite u, remember x4 is a compact coordinate. So at large u, we have a circle. Radius R form. And now you can ask for which value of UK this geometry is not singular. There is no point of singularity. And that fixes the value of UK in, as a function of lambda and x4. The relation is. K is equal to lambda. Okay.
So, but still, it has nothing to do with curvatures, right? So, if I compute 10-dimensional curvature, it will not depend on the size. It's like in a, so pretty much that direction is just Euclidean. It's like a horizon in the well, it's not a horizon.
Well, that is true. That is true. But curvature depends on u, and
that's correct.
And in particular, the minimal and the growth as u goes becomes smaller and smaller. In particular, it reaches the maximum value at u equals uk, and uk depends on that one. That's how.
So you're going to say that by the same argument there should be pretty much, it looks like you're saying that there is a critical temperature beyond which the supercavity approximation breaks down for these three things.
Yeah, I don't know. Here I think the situation is very simple. Now the position of the tip depends on how far. And therefore, the curvature also depends. The curvature also depends.
But locally, at the tip, the geometry is flat. Once you found the correct, so there is no curvature whatsoever. It's the space geodesically completes itself, and there is just a plate. It's like you take Schwarzschild geometry and you analyze it in time. So then the circle, the circle shrinks to zero size, but there is no curvature there. It's flat. It's really like a radio, it becomes like a geometry full of water. So exactly the same happens there. So it is true that you need to take hooks up and large, but that's related to the fact that it's not, This is simply because we need to compute the curvature of the bulk volume of the brain. And that depends on...
Well, there's no brain here. Brain...
Bulk volume, I mean the flat quadrant. Anyways, that's not very...
So here, that is flatter.
Sorry?
A what is flatter? I mean, there could be a small curvature thing. I mean, it's just...
Locally or flat, right? So it's like in a short...
This is not short. I mean, right. This is much more like a DS.
But even Swiss curvature is
not a... Well, come on. In the DS, you know very well the curvature is zero.
Maybe it has some formula for curvature invariant.
Yeah, that would be great. If you would write down the R10 or R5, well, in your case, R4, you would see that it's not, I don't think it's sensitive to the size.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with this. Well, look, how it works in ideas. There's a curvature, and you know that it is set by the tooth coupling.
That's correct. And it's set by the tooth coupling independent of what the temperature of the strip grain is. And the temperature of the strip grain is precisely what will be the radius, of analog of the radius of R.
Well, this is not quite true.
No, I think in normal ES it's true. Here, I don't know, but normal ES...
It is true in any regular horizon geometry. What you have is, you took a, it's not, I don't think we should be discussing, we can talk later, because I don't think this is relevant to your talk. But this is a generic feature of any regular horizon.
Okay, so basically you're saying that if you start with three braids and complexify a temporal circle,
yes,
then the curvature is not going to change.
No, it's independent of the temperature. And pretty much what you are saying is that I should expect that there will be something. I should see something happening, like my supergravity approximation breaks down depending on the temperature. And you know pretty well that that's not the case.
Yeah, I think in this model that's how it's supposed to happen. But it's a good point. I'm not sure I agree with you, but let's talk about it. Okay, so this is the gravity description of default brain. Now we want to add the D8 brain description. And we are going to study the dash of the D8. First of all, let me write down that. If you substitute the derivative on the billiton, no. So there's also two of them. So if you forget about dependence of the fields on the four space and dimensions, then the actions will do like this. In particular, it's easy to find the solution of this thing. And the solution is labeled by a simple constant, which basically parameterizes the position of the tip of the D8 brain in the U-coordinate. So on this cigar, the solution is actually the motion, which follows from the cigar action, looks asymptotically like D8 in R, and then it connects smoothly somewhere at some point in the cigar, which I hope you know. I believe the equation of motion looks like this. See that as you approach, as you know, the derivative of x squared is that the u goes to infinity.
So it has this shape.
Now, one thing we can do is we can compute the asymptotic separation of the dA and dA bar using this equation of motion and relay this asymptotic separation, which remember is given by L, to this quantity we know. When you do this, what you get is something which you get something which is very similar to this formula. And what you get is this. So this is the picture of this brain. Now we can start the methods. Methods here are the small excitations of the field which enters the DBI. Again, we start with the DBI action. We allow the dependence of the embedding of the deep brain on the four space-time coordinates, and we require these excitations to be normalizable as u goes to infinity, and we also require them to be either even or odd under the interchange of the two sides of the d8 and d8 bar. And this basically gives the spectrum.
The dilaton will grow.
Yeah. So this gives a spectrum, and the equation, the differential equation that you have to solve. In general, you have to do it numerically, but for large excitation numbers, the asymptotic spectrum can be found analytically. In particular, we observe that masses of both vector and the scale masses are proportional to n. So that the masses grow linearly with the excitation, which, as we all know very well, is not what we want from the immunological models of QCD. At least that's not the case in the experimentally, this is not very behavior. Although there have been proposals in the literature how to correct the holographic theory so that m squared scales like m, but all of these proposals are phenomenological in nature. And from the brain construction, you see that it would be very, very hard to do. Yeah, what else should I say about the message? Yeah, another point that I want to make. Masses is that, of course, you see the massless spine, which appears as boson boson of the broken symmetry, which is the axial flavor symmetry in this case. And however, you don't see the asymptotic restoration of chiral symmetry. So there have been, again, proposals that at very, very high excitation numbers, the scalars and pseudoscalars would pair and they would have the same mass. Here, from the analysis of the Meson spectrum, you immediately see that they're not going to have the same mass as all people in space.
Can you remind what n corresponds to for that Meson? What is n?
N is just an integer.
Is that the charge under one?
This is a regular expression. So this is basically, you start with some lesson and you
write it. So it's like a short E, right? Yeah.
So this spectrum is computed by, this is the spectrum of the Laplace operator?
Yeah, essentially, yes.
In the default background, or also the D8 is included?
No, the D8 is never, we never include any back reaction of the D8. We're in the regime where an F is much, much, another spiral in zero to then. And, well, there are, of course, problems associated with that, you know, very well. In particular, it's not clear how to construct perturbative expansion of this. As soon as you have some variation from the gauge break, it travels. But no, I don't have anything to say on this.
So you could you also take NF to zero and get the same spectrum?
NF to zero? Well, you do need the basically the spectrum doesn't depend on NF at all, but you do need at least one pair of frame and the frame together. Because this is the spectrum of excitations on the V8 orbital. So what you really do is you start with this PDI. You write it. Now the inverted coordinate of explorer is not only a function of U, but also a function of the space time coordinates, x0 through x3. And so you write this. Plus perhaps some function you should better do. I don't remember. I don't have. Then you linearize this PDI around this background, the curved background, and then you diagonalize the. Then you substitute for. And then basically, what you need to do is find the spectrum of some differential technical random order, and you that gives you the allowed values of mass. That's how you do that. So these are the excitations which live on the data. Of course, since you are in the theory, which is from the couple, these excitations, you know, this quark, so you have quark, definitely quark, right, quark to the ends, but also the strong one, right, with the quark, point, with the gauge, the cardinal gauge.
Okay, so the 8 by the 10 tells into this means of the forming.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so this is the Messon story, and important point here: the scale of all the Messons completely set by this asymptotic distance L in this theory. So there are two parameters: R4, which sets the scale of the global mass, and basically which is the global Planck scale. And L, which sets the scale of the Messon mass. And we'll see later that R4 also sets the scale of environment dimension. And L sets the scale of chaos distribution. These two things are separate. In particular, you can take these two scales very different. In this model, you can slide the distribution separately.
Is there a constraint on L so that there will be a vacuum in the
well, you can don't want to see it
for the string scale.
Right. You definitely don't want the L to be a little bit of a string scale. You want L and R4 much larger than the for the DBI, for example.
Can I ask you something? So, from the filter side, M corresponds to Y.
Oh, this is NC. So M?
Small M.
Small M. Small M. Well, it's some radial excitation number for that.
I see. So what happens if I say here, like, so if I read Schrodinger's thing about like Meson as the cloud state of I probably can also try to design some angular momentum of the cloud state.
Right.
And if I want to get this, higher speed mesons, what I should do.
Good. If you want to get to a higher speed meson, you should study rotating string. So far, I've been talking about the scalar impact. Okay, now let me just find that.
You talked about the confinement scale and the Kyle symmetry breaking scale. Is there a bound between the two? The one is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just geometrically, L must be smaller than 4. Well, up to some number. Basically, you cannot separate. If you can multiply them, sir, so you cannot separate the 8 and the 8 bar a distance larger than half the circumference. So that is basically the bound. Mm-hmm. So that is a bound on L versus upward, but you'll also see in a second that you cannot have a L phase transition with temperatures smaller than the confinement transition. But I'll talk about this in a few minutes. What's happening at final temperature? So at final temperature, we need to complexify the Euclidean time coordinate, and we need to consider two computer methods. One would be just this, with compact time, and another will be the method for black hole.
That's why, because this one is just an EH signal geometry of the default grain,
and there is no constraint whatsoever on the temperature there. That's why I was saying that there shouldn't be any restriction on the size. And
that's right. Oh, but this is really not a different, the three brain. In the three brain, I may agree with you, but in the four brain, I really think that coverage does depend on the four.
Actually, it's also not clear that there is no solution when you allow the size to vary. In principle, there could be a solution. It will be more complicated.
Mm. Well, okay.
So it will correspond just to turning on some additional, I don't know, there would be, in principle, that could correspond to deforming the theory by some operator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but so that presumably will have higher free energy.
But it would be a different theory, yeah.
Okay, so now if we want to study the matter behavior in this geometry, we need to study the DBI. Well, we basically need to look at the DBI action in this or that geometry, depending on what temperature is. And in the following, I'm going to look at the DA brains in the black hole phase, because the DA brains in the confining phase we basically already discussed, and there's no new physics associated with them as we follow. No qualitative new physics associated with the conductive front end. So let me discuss the DA brains in the black hole geometry. So the DBI action that we need to write down is going to be different. So now the DBI is this. And the equations of motion that follow are also different. And now there can be, in principle, two solutions of the equations of motion which follow from here. One solution is more or less like the curved brain. It's more or less the analog of the curved brain in the zero temperature spot. And the other solution is the brain whose x4 coordinate doesn't depend on anything, and it just goes straight into the horizon. So let me draw a picture here. This will be this will be X4, and this will be the temperature. So, let me not draw this picture. So, let me just have this thing. So, there are two solutions. One solution is, again, the brain, which goes down and and at some point you know. And the other solution is the brain which goes down straight and intersects the horizon. The horizon appears at UT, which is given by this one. So now you can compare it with free energy. Oh, and of course, the only difference between these two solutions is that this one breaks the symmetry. And the solution where the brain and anti-brain go into the horizon preserves chaos in. So we need to compare the free energy of these two solutions to determine which one is thermodynamically preferred. And so now I'm working on that. So I'll take the equation of motion, which follows from this guy action, and compute the asymptotic distance between the brains, much like I did here. And what I find, so now this is going to be a function of u naught, and u naught is bounded from below by ut, which is the position of the horizon. So what I find is a curve like this. So in particular, we see that for sufficiently high temperatures, there is no solution which is curved. So if temperature is much larger than some number over L, there is no way to satisfy the equation of motion by having a curved solution. You necessarily have a solution which goes edging to the horizon. And this solution restores chaos limit. So this is the holographic description of phase where chaos symmetry is restored. On the other hand, if the temperature is small enough in the units of 1 over L, then there can be a curved solution. And in principle, that free energy is simply smaller than that of the straight solutions, and so the phase where chaos symmetry is broken is thermodynamically preferred. And what happens if you compute the difference in free energy as a function of u naught? There is a curve which looks like this. So in this regime, this is the regime where the tip of the brain is very far from the horizon. So basically, the brain doesn't feel the presence of the horizon at all, and therefore the curved solution is much preferred. We are in the low temperature phase where the chaos symmetry is broken. So this is the curved solution. And as temperature in the other regime, the straight solution. So here we are in the low temperature phase, and here we are in the high temperature phase. Okay. So again, let me again describe what's going on here physically. Suppose we start at a very, very high temperature. Then the only solution which is available is a solution where the brain is going to the horizon. The chaos symmetry is restored. Now we decrease the temperature. At some point, we have two solutions, much like what happens in ADS, in Hawking-Pechner machine. We've got small vector, large. Here we have two solutions, both of the two curved solutions, in addition to state solution, which is always present. But that the energy is, well, actually, it's minus energy. Well, it depends on what you call about that. So the point is that the free energy is such that the straight solution remains thermodynamically preferred. Then, as you decrease the temperature further, there happens, so at some point, the free energy of the curved solution becomes smaller, larger. Basically, at some point, the curved solution becomes thermodynamically preferred. Of one of them. And the other solution is always. So this is the picture. And the temperature where the chiral phase transition happens is given by, so some numbers 0.17. Okay. So the temperature of chiral phase transition is. Over L. Now we can also write it as 0.17 over R divided by L over R and draw a phase diagram in the T and L over R phase plane. So now this curve looks like this. It's just one rat with some number. And this face here, above the curve, is the face where Helsinki is restored. Now, what we also know is that the confinement happens at the scale which is set by R4. And if we are not in the deconfinement phase, there can be no chiral phase transition because there is no black hole, there is no horizon in which these breaks can fall. So this part of the curve is invisible because we were operating under the assumption that there is a horizon where these breaks can fall. So really we have this phase diagram. This phase diagram. And then it's also L, as you remember, is restricted from above by R, so it's a number for the one. So the diagram is this. Above this curve, we have deconfinement and Helsinki is restored. Here, we have deconfinement and Helsinki is broken. And here the theory is in the confined regime because it is wrong. So that's the phase diagram. And as usual in this gravity setup, the phase transition is on first order because the free energies intersect and it's a function of time. Okay, now this is the final time story. Very flush.
Yes. So, in the phase, in the highest temperature phase where we have two right of that curve, you have grains going through the horizon. So, for doing calculations on the other side, what happens inside the horizon matter and why?
So, if I understand the question correctly, you're asking whether from the field theory you can see what happens inside the horizon or not.
It's just that. What happens inside the horizon will matter or not for the field theory calculation?
First of all, we're in the regime where the field theory calculations are not, which is not accessible. Second, well, I really doubt that you're going to be able to see beyond the horizon.
No, the question is not really trying to probe the physics beyond the horizon from the field theory, but say, if I just want to use the gravity calculation to make some prediction for the field theory side, do I need to care about what happens inside?
Oh, well, you probably need to impose some boundary conditions on the horizon. It's very similar to what you do in multinational models. As Andrei tells you, if you want to compute all sorts of real-time quantities in the boundary theory, you need to impose some boundary conditions on the horizon. So here, basically the same thing.
Maybe what you are asking, what will happen with meson spectrum,
right?
So because so it's exactly the same as you expect in a field theory, right? So in principle, meson spectrum goes from very large up to infinity. But if you study theory at a finite temperature, you cannot probe scales below the temperature because black hole corresponds to equilibrium state in a field theory. So it doesn't make sense to ask how does my spectrum look like at scales half the temperature, so I don't think it's accessible. And so that is reflected here that when you will be computing, presumably the spectrum of mesons, you will find out if they are above the temperature. The ones that you will see will be the one which have mass highs and temperature.
Well, if you ask the question about spectrum of mesons, I think you can follow the meson masses in the in the place where Perel's image is broken, even beyond the point of Perel's image.
Can you see at finite temperature, can you see the mesons reach temperature whose mass is less than the temperature? I don't think so.
Well, first of all, the answer is, of course, yes. You always see a pattern. No? No, the pion always stays. No, if you have a configuration of brain which is curved, the pion is not going to disappear.
Okay, yeah, then I'm wrong.
But basically what happens, it's a good question, what happens with the mass as you cross the critical range. And since it's a first order phase transition, I don't think that anything particular drastic happens. So if you're looking at the phase where chaos is broken, at some point it becomes the superheated phase. So basically it's no longer a global minimum, but it's still a local minimum. And so the global minimum corresponds to the character story, to the phase where chaos is broken. But if you keep looking at the effect at this phase where chaos is broken, you just see how your meson masses continuously go down.
How does chiral symmetry reflect in the meson spectrum?
There's a pion.
Is the statement then whether there is a massless meson in the spectrum or not? Then at any temperature, why are you saying there is a critical temperature at which the pion becomes massless?
No. Mm-hmm. No, it's never going to happen in this model.
Well, okay.
But that's not the global minimum. It's the first order phase.
Otherwise, you should think something.
On the other hand, if you look at the second phase, where Perel's image is distorted, you can compute the two-point function. No, you can compute the special function, and what you are going to see is some. Resonance. Well, not in resonance. You're going to see poles in the with some both negative imaginary part. So in one phase you have no real resonance. In another phase you don't have anything. So this is the story with finite temperature, zero critical potential. Now, one qualitative feature of the system, which is nice, is that you can introduce very mechanical potential. And in particular, the system doesn't have any bosonic fields which are charged on this chemical potential, which would be demanded. So how do you do this? Well, you use the usual algorithm. And the assertion says that we need to. So, chemical potential on the boundary is coupled to the baryonic kernel. And from the holographic point of view, the quantity which couples to the baryonic kernel is the boundary value of a node. So this is the type of carbon that we have in the boundary. And so introducing chemical potential is equivalent to giving a non-zero expectation value to the boundary value of the gauge field on the gate. Now you need to write down the DBI action, which includes this gauge field on the gate ring. And this can also be done. So it's the same reaction as before, except there is also a term which is coming from the gauge of the brain. Now the equation of motion for this, there are two equations of motion. One is this, another is the equation of motion for the x, which is very similar to what it was before. And there are two solutions again. So, first solution is x squared equals constant. So these gradients again go to the right. So this is the solution to the straight gradient. But now what can happen is these straight gradients can have some non-trivial profile application. So this is the solution to the straight gradients, but there is some application profile. And then the second solution is a curve. So x4 is not constant. So this is the straight. So x4 is not constant, but in this case, you necessarily must have a constant value of a node. Now, in other words, turning on chemical potential in the phase where chirosymmetry is broken is not going to affect anything because there are no particles which are charged under under the chemical potential. But on the other hand, turning on spreading chemical potential in the phase where the brain becomes depressed, chirosymmetry is restored. There, no, this phase is sensitive because there are free quarks. So now what you're supposed to do is you should compare the values of the free energy. Well, now it's not free energy, it's this ground potential between these two phases, and again determine which configuration of the brain is preferred.
Sorry, the second case is really forced on you by the equations of motion. So when you have
well, the second case is basically the statement that if you allow, so it's forced on you by the equations of motion. So what you see is that the derivative of a node is positive. So if you have the same value of a node at the boundary, you're going to have a cusp. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to have some source of charge in the brain. So now we need to compare the two values of grand potential to determine which configuration is thermodynamically preferred. Before we do that, we really need to relate the boundary value of a node to chemical potential, because really all we know is that the boundary value of a node is so the chemical potential is equal to the boundary value of a node that you put in infinity, plus some constant. So really, if you require so one thing that you know is that the charge density is proportional to the derivative of the action with respect to mu. And that is a function of mu. So if you require that the charge density is zero at mu equals zero, then what you find out is that you need to subtract the value of the horizon from its value of the boundary to get the direct formula of mu. And so now you can use this formula to and the equation of motion to
Thank you.
So now you can use this formula and the equation of motion to compute the free energy of, well, not the free energy, the action of this branch as a function of, as a function of mu. And then you need to compare this with the corresponding value, which is only a function of mu naught. So again, remember in the straight line configuration, the only parameter that enters is mu, and in the curved line configuration, the only parameter that enters is mu naught. So basically, what you find is that at small temperature, when the temperature is very, very small, the critical value of chemical potential, where the chiral phase transition happens, is set by mu naught. Well, this number can be computed, it's not very interesting. And then you can find the curve which interpolates between this point and the point at Tc and zero chemical potential. So your diagram looks like this. And you keep it like it's a line of first order phase transition. It starts at some number over L as 0.17 over L. And then it goes down and it ends at mu for the number function. The important thing to remember is that this mu naught itself is lambda over L times 1 over L. So this point, the value of mu naught is parametrically larger. So the value of the intercept of this curve with t equals 0 axis is parametrically larger than the value of the intercept with the mu equals 0 axis. So that is the story. And of course, this is not the complete truth. The complete truth is that there is also a confinement temperature, which is some number up front. And of course, below this temperature, there can be no phase transition. And since this confinement only involves the gluons, it also makes sense to you. So complete phase diagram. Now it's instructive to compare it with the phase diagram of real PCD, where with masses work, where it's first order up until some critical point, and then it's second order all the way to mu equals 0 axis. So while in the regime of small chemical potential, the system clearly doesn't reproduce the order of phase transition correctly, when chemical potential is not 0, both then in the system will have the first order phase transition. And, so this is the story at final chemical potential of temperature. And,
there are also some claims about the superconducting phase for high mu and low T. Do you find any evidence?
Yeah, that's right. So there is some superconducting risk here. There is this CFR polar frame risk here. Yeah, I would say it's a good question.
Of course, there's no evidence that there are all of these phases. These are just theoretical models.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, I would say it's a good question. So another question, which I think are interesting here, is how to incorporate the drag workness into the system. So if in this setup, you cannot separate the gate from the deporter. And that's why. So if you forget about gate particles and just look at the gate and deporter intersection and look at the degrees of freedom which lead to this intersection, since you cannot separate gate from deporter, the mass of the corresponding excitation is always zero. Sorry, it's always zero. So this is basically a statement that we have chiral metal interception. In the case where you put separate the braids, you necessarily have non-chiral metal. And that's why you can, the separation corresponds given a mass. So here you cannot give a mass in a single way. And presumably, given the mass to the quark, given the bare mass to the quark, corresponds to turning on some non-zero expectation value for the Dagens. Turning on some non-normalizable mode for the open string Dagens, which stretches between the DA and DA bar. So that is actually an interesting question in its own right, because it relates to Dagen physics involved. Gauge theory and bounding, but it's not what we studied. And what are the possible things we have? Well, it's conceivable that this theory can find some other applications other than just even. This stage. Well, that's
okay. Are there any questions?
Can I come back to that? So you showed that A naught cannot wear in the it's a confined phase, but can presumably be a constant. Is there a problem with that?
Yeah, it's a constant.
So, but then on the field theory side, we would expect, so that corresponds to turning on a chemical potential.
No, but remember the chemical potential, you need to subtract. You basically.
But there is no horizon sense.
Yeah,
it means.
Right, good question. Well, I think this formula means that the constant A naught doesn't affect it. And of course, constant A naught doesn't affect the free energy. Well, that's precisely what is happening here. On one phase, you can set some finite value of chemical potential, which is constant A naught. But it's not going to affect anything in space. But some non-zero value of chemical potential is going to affect the other phase. And that's why the point of phase transition changes as you vary in it.
More questions? Okay, then let's bring the speaker in.